Good morning and welcome to this Brass Tack Sunday special on the coronavirus. I'm your host, Corey Lane. The producer is Dennis Johnson. And the expert panel consists of Barbados' Minister of Health, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Bostick. We will also be joined on the line by the Chief Medical Officer. His name is Dr. Kenneth George. We have in the studio with us this morning as well, we have Yvonne Martindale, and she is the, I think, deal with disease prevention and control.
I'm the Hospital Infection Control Officer at QEH.
And we are happy to have you. We expect to be joined on the line as well, Ambassador Francois Jackman from the Chinese Ambassador to Barbados. Barbados Ambassador to China. We're going to be hearing what's happening with some of these students over in China as well. And a lot of people have been calling and asking about that off air, so they can definitely look forward to hearing from that. And later in the program, just after lunch, we're going to be hearing from Barbados former Director of Aviation, Mitchison Beckles. He's going to be talking about some of the provisions at the port, specifically the airport, in relation to quarantine and all of those things. Now, in today's program, what are we hoping to achieve? And I just want to lay that out for us on the outset of the program. We're looking at what is the coronavirus, how serious is it, the mechanisms in place that Barbados has in place for your safety, and what can individuals do to protect themselves. We're also going to touch a bit on the threat to world safety and trade amidst the regathering and Barbados as a tourism destination. So those are things we can look forward to. We're seeking to answer those questions and any other questions you, the public, may have for any of our expert panel this morning. Now, before we get down to brass tacks, I just have to let you know this program is brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated. For building surprise, big or small, at Williams Metals we have it all.
Angles, flats, cement and doors, lumber, windows and much, much more. Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing. Big or small, at Williams Metals we have
it all. At Williams Metals we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.com.
We want to start this Brass Tack special off with a clip from some news sources to put this whole coronavirus in perspective. Let's take a listen. Well, we're going to take a listen to that in a moment. But before we hear from that, let's hear from a Minister of Health, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Bostick. What is Barbados' position on the coronavirus as we speak this morning?
Good morning, Corey. Good morning to listeners. It's indeed a pleasure to be here, to be able to share some important information with the people of Barbados, because we are aware that some panic has crept into the society, and that is understandable in the sense that we are facing what is a serious situation, and there's a lot of misinformation that is out there, and we need, as a Ministry of Health and Wellness, as a government, to ensure that we get enough information out to the public so that their fears can be allayed. But yes, this is a serious situation, and we've been following this now for quite some time in the Ministry of Health and Wellness, and we've been doing so even before it got to the stage where it is today. And in following the situation on the world stage, we have been preparing ourselves here in Barbados to ensure that we do everything possible to be ready in the event, if Lord forbids, that we have any such occurrence in Barbados. And that has been ongoing. It started, first of all, with some meetings within the Ministry of Health and Wellness to discuss the situation, to look at the protocols that are already in place and have been so for other similar situations like SARS and so on. So we're not starting from scratch, but certainly to ensure that those protocols are amended in the face of this current situation. Obviously, there'll be some different things that will arise that we have to be able to make adjustments to. So we've been doing that. In addition to that, we have had some technical meetings with technical persons from other ministries, because you need to understand that this is something that is not only for the Ministry of Health and Wellness as a concern. There are implications for other ministries, for other sectors of our society, the implications for the entire country. So we have been going along the route of an all-out approach, an all-Barbados approach to this problem, all-government approach, and also ensuring that the Queen Elizabeth Hospital and the central ministry and all of its manifestations, that we are all in concert and that we put together an effective and a comprehensive and sensible response to what is happening on the world stage.
Now, there's been this debate in relation to the closing of borders versus increased surveillance. We've heard a number of news sources speak to this. What is Barbados' position on that?
Right. We are not operating in isolation or in a silo. From the beginning of this outbreak, we have been in touch with the World Health Organization, which obviously is the world body, the Pan American Health Organization. We have the Caribbean Public Health Agency. And we also have the benefit of some other sources that we've been in contact with. Now, the World Health Organization made it clear that trade and tourism were not to be hindered in dealing with this matter at this stage. So they definitely indicated that banning travel really was not the way to go. But in Barbados, we investigate and we look at everything. We look at the data and we base our decisions on the scientific evidence. And in the view of the Ministry of Health and Wellness and the government of Barbados, we determined that we will manage this in a way that would not affect trade and tourism, and that we will follow the World Health Organization guidelines, and that there are two ways in which we would spend our efforts in terms of dealing with this, which is to try to prevent it from coming here through heightened surveillance at ports of entry, and also to sensitize the public in terms of personal hygiene so that we will minimize and mitigate the risk involved.
Mm-hmm. All right, we also have the Chief Medical Officer on the line, Dr. George Kenneth. We're going to say hello to him shortly, but Yvonne, anything you want to add in terms of allaying the fears of Barbados in relation to what's happening here with the coronavirus?
Certainly. Good morning, Barbados. Mm-hmm. I want to join with the Minister of Health in allaying the fears of the public in Barbados. This virus, though new, and that is in terms new in terms of some of the symptoms and severity of the symptoms, mm-hmm. It belongs to a group of viruses that we have known for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And this group of viruses, the coronaviruses, along with other respiratory viruses, are known to cause mostly the common cold. Sometimes, yes, it can cause other severe symptoms, but by and large, the public can be reassured that if they follow the advice that is given from scientific persons like myself, persons with a lot of knowledge like myself, and the Ministry of Health, what's coming out from the Ministry of Health, that they will be first and foremost protected, and even if they do become ill, that we have all the facilities here in place to deal appropriately with them.
Okay. I actually want to shore that up, but I think it's better to hear from the Chief Medical Officer on that, some discussions I had last night with some of the persons in the field. But good morning and welcome, Dr. Kenneth George. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Good morning.
Yes. Now, as we started off, we didn't want to even call the P word, panic. But the idea is that I think that many Barbadians listen to a lot of news sources on social media and all type of different things. And I always feel it is much better to hear from the experts, those in the field, in terms of what are the main tenets, the main areas that we should be focusing on, and what it is, what is the main message you'd like to get to Barbadians?
So the main message I would like to get is that the virus can be transmitted from person to person. Around the world and around the globe, you're still getting hundreds of cases every single day. The virus has now spread out of the confines of China, and it involves 22 countries. And we learned 2 days ago that one or two of those countries indeed had in-country spread. What Barbados needs to do is first protect our borders. We need to put all our resources into where we believe there is a point where the virus will enter back. And we have suggested those are at our ports of entry, whether it be the seaport, the airport, Port St. Charles, Port Ferdinand. And the way to break that cycle is to have a good and strong surveillance mechanism that identifies first potential persons with issues, so persons coming out of China. Second, having the appropriate protocols to guide persons without symptoms. And third, taking the immediate action to divert persons who have symptoms to safe locations. The risk to Barbados still remains low. However, I cannot at this point say that we must let down our guard. And what the minister was saying is that it needs to be an all-of-government approach. We have put some specific measures with immediate effect at our ports of entry. We have worked with our environmental health officers and our nurses at the ports of entry because we believe those are the eyes and ears of seeing what's happening coming into Barbados. We have identified the immigration department as a key stakeholder. Why? Because the kiosks, they are updated questions. If you go into the Grand Canal International Airport, you will see posters, etc., giving persons information for action. So we have put a series of measures in place to boost the surveillance at our ports. And I think with it, that is a major pillar in preventing disease.
Now, I am familiar with when you have issues of national security, some issues you may not want to discuss. But in terms of medical security, I think there's some that we can outline in terms of some of the mechanisms. Now, I came back in the island about 2 days ago, and I can confirm there's that additional question. If you've been to China or the Congo anytime within the last 2 weeks. Now, understanding and hearing from numerous reports that the symptoms that can actually lay latent up to 2 weeks. What mechanisms do we have in place for persons who may come in not showing symptoms?
Right. So let me say up front that although it has been documented that asymptomatic persons can transmit the disease, the evidence suggests that that form of transfer of disease is in the minority. The major way how you get the disease is close personal contact from surfaces, aerosolization, etc. So that, yes, it has been determined that in a few cases, persons who have no symptoms can carry disease, but I don't want it to be felt that that is the standard way of transmission. Mm. Standard way is a typical respiratory virus. And that's why we have asked Barbados to relook at their respiratory hygiene. We have put out a lot of information there to let persons know how they can protect themselves and how they can protect the public from having a respiratory illness.
Okay. As the norm, we open the lines just about 20 minutes after 11 o'clock. But I'll invite people to call while we have you on this first part of the program to ask you, the minister, or Ms. Martindale, any questions that they may want to ask. But there are a number of questions coming into the studio already. And I'm going to start by asking this. And it says, I personally don't believe that we are seriously ready if something happens relating to that virus. If we were serious, we should start by locking down procedures at the port. informing the DEM, seeing that their department has taken up the task of organizing or getting the relevant departments in place to handle the situation, quarantine the vessels while checking the person's passport for their travel history, and also evacuate surrounding areas to avoid contamination, as it was done in Italy. We are not ready. Even if after going through checks and realizing that the persons who collapsed has not been in contact with anyone in China, we would know if the extremely protective measures were actually functioning in the right order. Now, this person is really calling for the hammer to come down. And there are many people out there with that same thought process. So what I want to do is give you all the opportunity to speak, not only to that person, but persons with similar thinking. Minister, we start with you.
Yeah, let me start off here. I want to assure the people of Barbados that we have been getting ourselves ready for a couple of weeks now. Of course, it is still a work in progress. But I would like to share some information to indicate that this country, we have some strengths in our systems that are working for us, and that are they are all part of our preparedness at this point in time. First of all, we have a strong public health system, and that must not be taken for granted. We have the human resources in terms of, I can tell you of three, for example, Mr. Alvin Hart, who is the infections control officer of the geriatric hospital, actually spent 2 years in Sierra Leone, 2015-2016, during the Ebola outbreak. And he was the World Health Organization consultant during that period. He is with us and he is giving us all of the advice based on his experience. Dr. Singh, he is the Port Health Officer for Barbados, but he is also the representative for the Caribbean on ICAO. And we have Dr. Corey Ford and Ms. Martindale. They are two very, very competent persons with a lot of experience, and also they are in contact with a number of persons and their colleagues in the international community. We have in Barbados an infections control center.
That's correct.
And that center is about one of the best, if not the best, in this region. The best Dos Santos Public Laboratory is going to be ready in a few days to be able to do testing for the virus. And we will make that facility available to certainly others in the Caribbean, in the Eastern Caribbean. And that is with the assistance of PAHO. We also have contact, as I said, daily contact with WHO, PAHO, and CARFA, and we are following those guidelines. We are fortunate to have in Barbados the ambassador for China and the Eastern Caribbean, and he has been in daily contact with me and providing information and assistance. And we also have our ambassador in China, who is there and is being very, very useful in terms of making contact with Barbadians who are residing in China and also passing relevant information to us. And finally, and most importantly, we have the Caribbean Implementation Agency for Crime and Security with the Joint Regional Communication Center located here in Barbados that is providing us with first-hand information or intelligence in terms of persons entering the country. So That is a strength. Those are our strengths. So to say that we are not prepared really is not correct. We started several days ago to sensitize all of the workers at the airport and do the necessary training in terms of getting persons ready to deal with this situation. We have increased surveillance at the ports of entry, and Barbadians will see a significant increase in that surveillance this coming week because we are deploying more people to the ports of entry. And also, as a result of the support of the ambassador, and I thank him for China residing in Barbados, we have on island now about 50 thermal detectives, those scanners, that will be deployed this week at all ports of entry to assist with that effort. And we have the protocols which we have been following in terms of people coming to this country from China or from anywhere. And the necessary steps are being taken to deal with whatever we face.
What I would like to add to what the Minister of Health has said is that evidence, which is what we base our advice and our guidelines and protocols on, evidence from the past has not shown that closing borders actually stop any of these infectious diseases from spreading. And like the minister has said as well, we have been monitoring the situation, and even before WHO have declared that this was an global health emergency, we have been increasing the amount of personal protective equipment and getting everything ready, because infection control, and with myself, the infectious disease doctor, Dr. Corey Ford, we have been seeing that it was just a matter of time before we have seen an infectious disease of this nature. This is my fourth experience dealing with an infectious disease of this nature. So there is no need really to close borders. It does not help. What does help is if persons not follow all the advice you see out there on social media. What does help is if you follow the tried and true advice given from the persons who have experience in this field.
I wanna just back that up, only because last night I was in doing my research for the program. I was speaking to some officials here who helped set up these things in South America, and I too was blown away, because sometimes you fall into this thought, you know, small island state, 2x2 Barbados, you know, we ain't ready. Not understanding the number of things happening in the background. So I can understand these types of messages coming to me on the chat and on the WhatsApp, simply because you made these comments out of ignorance, not knowing that Barbados really monitors these things 365 days a year, etc. I was blown away by some of the stuff, so I can understand the comments. And that's what was the importance of a program like this, to demystify and also inform the public of the steps being taken. Now, we are joined on the line as well now from our PAHO representative, responsible for health surveillance, disease prevention and control, Dr. John Marie Urangabuba. You have him on. You want to say a good morning to him as well. Good morning, sir. Can you hear us? Good morning. Well, we know he's there, so we're gonna just get him up on the line. We're gonna fix that in the background. We're hoping to hear from him, basically to get a regional perspective, to find out what's happening across the region and how we are treating to these various things. We're gonna try again. Good morning and welcome. Dr. John Marie, are you with us? Right, definitely a technical issue, but he is there, so fear not. We're going to go to another message, and we're going to also take some calls. So, Ms. Martindale and Minister, could prepare for that. This one says, good morning, Corey. This stuff mimics the flu. How do they know if anyone came in contact with someone on the plane? Are they using the thermal scanners at the airport? I think you spoke to that before, but the question before is about this mimicking the flu, and how do you know if it's the flu versus if someone came in contact on a plane?
Well, how you would know is if you speak to those persons, you get an idea of where they've traveled, and surveillance is key, and making sure that you take a good travel history of where the persons come from. Mm-hmm. So that would help identify whether it is the bog standard flu, because yes, it is flu season. Mm-hmm. So there are other respiratory viruses out there that will have the same symptoms. But what might give you a indication that is this particular strain is where the person came from.
Mm. And there's similar questions like this. So I'll ask them together, and then we also bring back in the chief medical officer. This one says, what are the protocols for persons from ships? Are these persons being checked? Are the ships quarantined, and are persons with flu-like symptoms still allowed to come to shore? So Dr. Kenneth George, you heard these questions. What say you? Dr. Kenneth George? All right. Ms. Mario, I'll let you continue with that.
What's happening at the seaport is similar to what is happening at the airport as well. There's been increased surveillance of persons coming through the port. And again, what I said before, the travel history is important, as well as anyone who displays obvious signs of infection, that is like the fever and so on, they'll be pulled aside and they will be questioned in more detail. Mm-hmm. But
and it depends on the region they're coming from,
course,
as well.
Of
so
course,
if you have flu-like symptoms, but you just were probably in Jamaica.
Of course. Like I said, mm-hmm. it is flu season. Mm-hmm. So you are going to see persons displaying signs and symptoms of the flu.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Someone is asking for specificity here. Can the minister be more specific with the term strong health service? Experts and specialists aside, what's the level of our health infrastructure?
In terms of health infrastructure, well, I mentioned the fact that we have a lab, a public health laboratory that will soon be able to do testing if that is required. I've also mentioned the fact that we have the isolation center, which is managed by the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. The next step here, and we have war game this from beginning to end, right down to our worst case scenario. The next step in the process.
Go ahead.
The next step in the process is if we need to go to the level of establishing a quarantine center. And we have started that process and we've identified two locations which are being looked at even today. So that within a day or two, by tomorrow or Tuesday, we should have established a quarantine facility in Barbados in case we have to quarantine people. And let me say, by quarantine, this does not mean that the person has the virus. But if we have people who are coming from the area, for example, you have the 2-week period of incubation period, and out of an abundance of caution, we feel it necessary to have those persons in quarantine in case the symptoms should manifest themselves during that period, we are making that arrangement. If someone then, let's say in the quarantine center, develops symptoms, we will then move that person from there to the isolation center where they'll be monitored and the testing will be done to confirm whether or not they actually have the virus. So all of these things we are putting in place. When it's used the public health system, we have persons within the polyclinics, public health nurses, with the responsibility of monitoring people who may be at home, who may be within the communities. And we are also stepping that up to include a group of persons dedicated to visiting persons to ensure that they do not have the symptoms.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I remember in the height of the Ebola scare, we did set up a facility here, and I understand it is state of the art, but it houses 6 persons. And if you have a plane or a ship, you would need much more capacity than that. But with the mechanisms that you outlined, it will give us the capacity to monitor quarantine from in the community. It's only then if we have the serious symptoms.
And even that, we are making provisions for that. There's a contingency for that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. We talked about a clip earlier today in terms of hearing from other news sources. We're going to try at that again, and then we'll take some of your calls. Just gone 29 minutes before noon. You're listening to a Brass Stack special on the coronavirus.
The Philippines has reported the first death outside China from the new coronavirus.
The 44-year-old Chinese man died in hospital on Saturday. He was from Wuhan, where the overwhelming number of deaths have been reported. The World Health Organization says he was infected before he got to the Philippines. The total number of dead in China now stands at 304. 14,380 people are infected, according to official Chinese government figures. That suggests a steady double-digit percentage rise is continuing.
As Chinese government concern grows about the financial impact of the epidemic, the central bank says it's pumping over $170 billion into the economy. The move will come into effect when China's financial markets reopen on Monday. It will involve the bank buying up shares to boost confidence and to free up money for companies to invest. The virus has led major Western companies, including IKEA, Volkswagen and Tesla, to close outlets or stop production. China's travel and tourism sector has also taken a major hit.
The United States is among several countries that are imposing travel restrictions in an effort to keep the new coronavirus from China at bay. U.S. measures set to go into effect late this afternoon, but the World Health Organization warns that travel bans aimed at halting the spread of the virus could backfire.
WHO doesn't recommend restrictions on travel and trade, despite the rapid acceleration of the coronavirus outbreak. Spokesman Christian Lindemeyer says closing borders won't keep out the virus.
As we know from other scenarios, be it Ebola or other cases, whenever people want to travel, they will. And if the official paths are not open, they will find unofficial paths.
The United States has declared the coronavirus a public health emergency and says it will deny entry to foreigners who visited China in the past 2 weeks. Australia says it plans to take similar action. WHO says increasing surveillance and monitoring is more effective in limiting spread of the disease.
Right, that is the clip we spoke about. It kind of confirms a lot of what Minister Bostic and Ms. Martindale spoke about before. Now, joining us, we have David Ellis. He's here with us as well. We go over to you, David.
Well, we've been having some technical challenges, and that has forced us to rearrange things somewhat. And I have on my phone from China, Ambassador Francois Jackman. Mr. Jackman, good morning. That's good morning, Barbados time. Hello? Just trying to make sure that you can hear me well enough. Hello? You're hearing me well?
Yes.
Okay, well, again, my apologies for these severe technical difficulties that we seem to be experiencing here today, and this method will mean that the level coming from Mr. Jackman will be lower than we would want it to be, so I'm going to ask you to project a bit. Tell us, what is the situation from a Barbadian perspective when it comes to this whole question of the coronavirus in China at the moment?
Well, David and listeners, the first thing I should say is that there is a community of about 75 Barbadians here in China. Most of them are students, approximately 55 are students, and the rest are other nationals doing other things, some teachers, some professionals, some spouses, some dependents. I have been in touch with the majority of this community either directly or through WhatsApp or through the equivalent, the Chinese equivalent of WhatsApp, which is called WeChat, or via email, with virtually everyone. And so far as I can tell, everyone is okay. I'd like to say something in particular to commend everyone who is all of the Barbadian community here in China, because not only have they been okay and following the instructions being given by the authorities, but they have also been really calm, courageous, and positive in the face of this real challenge. None more so than the three students, the three young Barbadians who are presently at the epicenter of the epidemic in the city of Wuhan. I've been in touch with them every day, several times a day, and they are coping with a great degree of calm and grace under pressure, which really is a tribute to their character, to their upbringing, and frankly to the way in which they have been socialized as Barbadians. So really, in the face of a difficult set of circumstances, the Barbadian community that I've been in touch with here has really kept calm and has been doing all of the right things.
Explain for us what would have been the business of these students in Wuhan. What were they studying?
Oh, I don't recall exactly what they're studying, but they are amongst the 50 or so Barbadians who are studying in different universities across China, mostly on schemes administered by the China Scholarship Council, which gives generously between 10 and 12 scholarships a year to Barbadians to study in China. So we have Barbadian students, undergraduates and postgraduates, all across the country.
You spoke about the pressure that is exerted upon them and the others right now. Can you be a bit more specific about that? Because from this distance, we hear about people being isolated, people being urged to stay at home, people having to walk with masks. What exactly is the pressure that they are articulating to you?
The standard measures now for everyone in China is to wear a mask. So you can go outdoors in any Chinese city today, and you will see the overwhelming majority of people who are outdoors are wearing masks, sometimes gloves. Almost all of them are wearing masks. The authorities have also asked people not to go outdoors or to limit their outings as much as possible to limit contact and contamination. So the streets of most Chinese cities are actually quite empty. And to further reinforce this measure, most Chinese municipalities, it's certainly the case here in Beijing, and I know it's the case in other major municipalities, have extended the Chinese New Year holiday and asked people for this week to work from home.
There's a degree
so
of...
It's created an atmosphere which is quite unusual for Chinese cities, which are famously bustling and full of energy.
There has been some discussion about the degree to which we should be looking to bring home Barbadians who have been living in China. We've seen other countries evacuate their own. From the Barbadian perspective, what is the thinking on that?
Well, specifically, I would leave that matter, which is frankly a policy matter, to the minister. But what I can say two things on this topic. First, as far as I'm aware, only small numbers of nationals have been evacuated from, of a small number of countries have been evacuated from Wuhan and Wuhan alone. No country is evacuating its nationals from the whole country. And across the country, the preventative measures that have been put in place by the authorities seem to be fairly effective. I am not a medical person, so I can't judge, but I can tell you, for example, where I live in Beijing, you can no longer enter the compound without being screened for temperature by the security guards. And this is the case in most compounds across most of the country.
Okay, well, we'll keep you online for a while. It may be difficult for you to interact with other people who may call us or even the other panelists, but if something comes up, then I will come back to you. That's Ambassador Francois Jacquin in China. Corey?
Certainly, David. Very important. He answered some of the questions we have here coming into the studio, so I'm sure that listeners will be very appreciative of that. We're going to take a break right now, and when we come back to this Brass Tacks Sunday special on the coronavirus, brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful Permaclad U-Panel and R-Panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joints from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory-painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices. Delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas 425-2000 or Lowlands Christchurch 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Okay, what we want to do is bring in some of you callers into this program. So we're going to say just before we go on, we want to say good morning and welcome to our first caller. Welcome to Brass Tack Sunday. Good morning and welcome. Hi, good morning and welcome. You're on the air. Hey, caller, good morning. All right, get close to your telephones, not necessarily your radios. Good morning and welcome to Brass Tack Sunday. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, good morning. You're on the air.
Corey, morning to you and your guests.
Hi, morning to you.
Morning.
I have two questions, three actually, and I would ask them and then we'll hang up. The first one is this. I've been hearing a lot of talk about the port and what they're going to be doing for the port, but my question really would be, specifically, what are they going to do about the pilots that go aboard the ships to bring them into the port, especially those carriers that come from China and Japan and those places right down in Asia? What exactly are they? What preparations are being made for the pilots that go and bring these ships into the harbor and then tear them out again? The second question would be, Corey, heard you mention this, the facility that they have for quarantine people. And Mr. Minister, would like to ask you if that facility that Corey mentioned is the same facility that they had behind the Enmores or up by the same Dos Santos that you were speaking about earlier. If that is the same facility. The other question I would leave that, but I just wanted to know about the pilot and if the facility that Corey mentioned is the same facility right behind the Enmores up by Dos Santos.
I'm going to ask you all to just stick a pin there and answer those questions after, because remember, China is about 12 hours ahead of us, and therefore, Ambassador Jackman wants to get to bed. We've kept him from going to sleep. He has a couple of things that he wants to add before we let him go. So, Ambassador Jackman?
Yes, thank you, David. Just a couple of things, if I may. The first is that one of the really positive aspects of dealing with this challenge that we've had so far for the Barbadian community has been the way in which the community here has been in touch through the online world. There is a Chinese equivalent of WhatsApp called WeChat. Most of the Barbadian community who are here in China are members of this group, as are the members of staff of the embassy. And this group has allowed all of us to exchange views, experiences, advice, information in a way which I think has made it much less traumatic and has made many of us feel much less isolated than we would otherwise be. And this is particularly the case for our three students who were in Wuhan, who are part of this larger community, who, despite the isolation that they face, are able to talk, exchange information. We have one of the members of the group has been sharing e-books. So this group has played a really important role in keeping spirits up and helping information flow across the group and also to the embassy for us to be able to communicate with our official Chinese counterparts. So that's one thing. The second thing is that the Caribbean group of embassies here in Beijing, essentially we all face a similar set of challenges with students and nationals across China, and a few of us with nationals in Wuhan. So we're talking about the actions that we can take as a group to try and help our nationals and our students. And in fact, the Caribbean embassies are meeting tomorrow to have an in-depth discussion about what common actions we can take to help our nationals get through this situation. And then the last thing I wanted to say is I wanted to take this opportunity to encourage your listeners to get in touch with us if they have any questions of any kind. You can share my email address. It's fjackman@4. Or in touch with some parents, some next of kin. They can get in touch with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to be sure, but if they have some specific question about their loved ones, their friends, their family over here in China, I want everyone to feel free to get in touch with the embassy and let us know. We may not have the answer, but I promise you that we will do our best to try and get the information back to you.
Ambassador
Jack. So, David, those were the points I wanted to make. I really want to thank you for the opportunity to share this information and to assure everyone that the embassy team here in Beijing is doing everything that we can to look after, stay in touch with our nationals across the Chinese territory.
But Ambassador Jackman, you have spoken about the students and the care that is being exhibited here for them and the concern. But what about yourself and the other members of the team in the embassy in Beijing? What is the kind of atmosphere that you have there, and what personal impact has it had on you?
Well, for us, like for I expect everybody else living in China now, it has imposed limits on the things that we can do. We don't go out as much as we did. As I said before, the municipal authorities here have asked companies and embassies to have their staff work from home. So we will not be going into the office according to usual office hours this week. The Caribbean meeting, the meeting of Caribbean embassies that I mentioned earlier, normally we get together in one of the embassies a couple of times a month for these meetings. We're going to be doing this by Skype or by WhatsApp. So it has created an atmosphere which is really quite unusual. But thanks to the technology, we're still able to do one of the most important parts of our job, which is to keep in touch with one another and with our nationals.
Thank you very much for taking the time and losing some of your sleep to update us on the situation from a Barbadian perspective in China as that country confronts the coronavirus. That's Ambassador Francois Jackman, this country's ambassador to China.
Thank you very much, David, and Ambassador. Now, we would have heard the questions from the last call. I want to tap back over to those to answer his questions, his queries.
I will answer the second one if Dr. George is still on the line, I think.
Wait, let me check on that too. Dr. George, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. All right, you let him take the first one. Yeah, then. All right, you take the first one, Minister, take the second one. Dr. George.
Yes.
Right. You.
Could you remind me of the question? I might have been cut off. Sorry.
The question has to do with the pilots on going on board the vessels in the Bridgetown port.
Okay. So what happens is that we get information on the status of health of each major ship that enters, that is going to enter Barbados' waters. We get this information 48 hours before, 24 hours before, 12 hours. It's a continuous update on the state of the health of the passengers and crew. That is shared with the local authorities, including Port Health. Many of these large ships have either hospitals on the ship, a small hospital or operating room, they have quarantine facilities, etc. They have to declare what are the medical and infectious issues, contagious issues aboard the ship. We scrutinize those documents. Barbados does not allow infectious patients off the ship. Those patients remain on the ship in the ship's quarantine zone. So there's no mass offloading of persons with disease from the ship. The ship already has a mechanism, and our environmental health officers and our port health doctors are acutely aware that they need to go through the process of scrutinizing the information given by the ship, going through their areas where they house infectious patients, etc., to make sure that the passengers who have come off the ship are in a good state of health.
Okay. Let you answer question number two.
Yes, I had raised the issue of the quarantine facility, and thanks for the question, listener. But the facility at Enmore is not a quarantine facility, but an isolation center. Isolation center, which would be used for persons presenting with symptoms or confirmed cases, the quarantine center you referred to will be used for observation purposes, and that is for persons coming out of China or affected areas who, in the opinion of public health officials at ports of entry, should be held for observation, and that is the difference between the two.
I just want to add to what the minister is saying, that the facility at the hospital is for those persons requiring hospitalization. So not just ill persons, but those who require hospitalization. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The reports, I want to ask a follow-up question. The reports that come in to Port Health, 48 hours, 24 and 12 hours, is this a standard procedure, or when we have specific cases like this Ebola and coronavirus?
No. This is a standard procedure.
Okay.
We are always very vigilant at our ports of entry. And let me be a bit more specific, even to the airport. So when an aircraft arrives on Grantley Adams International Airport, the Environmental Health Inspectorate boards the plane. They dialogue with the persons on board the plane, and they scrutinize the health information provided on each passenger. However, even before the plane is going to land, we have an idea of if there's illness on that aircraft, because that is transmitted through the airline to the agents on the ground to public health. So we have an idea beforehand that there are persons who may be ill. If there's indeed an ill person on that aircraft with respiratory symptoms, there are protocols for identifying that person and identifying persons who may be sitting in the immediate area of that person. And the protocols advise as to what to do with the sick individual and what to do with the persons who are in the immediate vicinity. The person disembarks, when the aircraft come, they disembark. They are to follow the signage within the airport. They are to report to public health if they have visited China. They will be interviewed, and a few questions we want to know during that interview process. How long you've been in China? Which part of China you've been? Have you been in contact with healthcare workers? Because as many of you know, the disease has taken a significant toll on healthcare workers. We want to know where you're staying in Barbados, who you're staying with, what is your contact information. These things are things that we are collecting from persons who are coming in from the area of China on the whole. So this is part of our surveillance system. And what Minister speaks about in terms of the quarantine gives us another tier. And that is why we're moving towards this. This gives us another tier of protection, that if someone did indeed come from Wuhan, this is ground zero, those persons should be offered quarantine where they will remain separated from the general public for about 14 days.
Okay, thank you very, very much for that. Again, this is information that is not generally known, and that is why it's important to share this information here with the general public. We're going to try again to see if we can hear Dr. John Marie from PAHO. Good morning and welcome. Are you with us, sir?
I'm still with you.
Very good. Yes. Thank you very, very much. You just jumped right into the hot seat, because there are lots of questions here. Minister and I was actually discussing a question that came in now from the public. So I'll pose to you in relation to the factors influencing the emergence of these new viruses. And let's start there, and then we'll go on to look at the history of viruses and how we've treated to them.
All right, so thank you very much for the question. Well, I've been listening to the conversation, and I'm very pleased to hear the level of preparedness that the ministry has been put in place to face this major challenge. But talking about three viruses, we know that three viruses have been around for many years. Some are just living in the environment, some are affecting animals, and some are affecting humans. We are concerned now with this virus, which apparently, but still investigations are still going on, might have jumped from animals to humans. This is not really very unusual. We have seen it happening with other viruses of public health significance. So what we're looking at really is how far can this virus be able to infect humans? Because it depends on the genetics of the viruses, they can just be able to infect the humans, but if they do not have enough efficiency in doing so, it can take a while before it becomes a real, real major problem for the transmission among humans. So viruses have been around, some infect humans and animals, and they can just move from one group to another.
Okay, one of the main questions coming out from the public here online is, are we blowing this out of all proportion when we look at the fatality rate of 2% in comparison to many other viruses? We're looking at data from 1967, which carried fatality rates of up to 80%, 52%, 77%, and it varies. But we're just about just over 8,100 cases and 170 deaths. The question is, why are we having this reaction to this particular virus?
All right, so these are very legitimate questions, but let me say this. This virus has been known just for 1 month. So there are so many questions that still need to be asked about this new virus. And within a month, yes, the case fatality rate can still be low, but how far are we going to go? Nobody can tell. So until really we have accumulated enough data about this virus, we cannot be able to say that the number of people who have died from this virus is just going to remain within 2 to 4%, as you mentioned. So, for example, other viruses which belong to the same group as this new virus, it took a while before we came to the conclusion that we know how much people are dying from being infected. If I refer to, for example, SARS, it took about 9 months before the infection became under control, and we were able to go back and say that maybe between 10 and 20% of the people who are infected with this virus can die from it. So, it's too early, really, this stage to be able to say we know the case fatality rate for this infection.
Mm-hmm. All right, back to the question in terms of what's actually happening in terms of the what they call the evolution of the virus or mutation. The one of the questions here they want to ask you is if you would say that climate change has anything to do with this.
Well, climate change, not directly, but you see with what is happening with climate change, people have been moving and we have been invading the environment, which was inhabited by animals. So we're getting closer and there is a chance of transmission of infectious diseases between animals and humans. But being close, we have been exposed to infections, which were very uncommon in humans. Yes, to some extent, climate change and the movement which results can have an impact, but I will not say that there is a direct link as far as I know.
Okay. One last one before we go back to the telephone lines, and there's a question here from a caller. It says, there was a ship here, Adia Perla. I was here on Thursday. The St. Lucia kept it at bay, but it was allowed to come into Barbados. So the question I will ask is for the minister in terms of policy, but also in terms of from the PAHO perspective, is there a particular regional standard that you advise particular ministries of health to to go about? So you, Dr. Jean, you go for it. Go ahead.
Could I make a comment?
Sure, go ahead. This is Dr. George. Yes. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
So that statement is true. When the ship came to Barbados, though, we based our information on international health regulation. This was a ship that had a very large number of passengers and crew. And based on our investigations, we determined that the outbreak on the ship did not meet the criteria for denying entry. We need to step back and do things the way we can't do it. Each country will be allowed, yes, to do what they have to do. But Barbados' position has always been, let's examine the science and let's follow the science. And when our teams went and boarded the ship and scrutinized what was happening on the ship, we made a determination that those persons will not come off the ship, but those persons, the ship will be allowed into Barbados's waters. So we just followed what we normally do. This has protected Barbados from disease for several years, and it will continue to protect us. I am convinced that we have a good cadre of persons, both at the sea and airport, who have had collectively several years of experience. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we will be able to weather this storm too, this storm of the coronavirus. Barbados is well positioned. We have identified that there are some gaps. And when we met yesterday, and when we caucused yesterday, that was the our main objective, was to identify the areas that we thought could be ramped up quickly. And these include making sure, as Minister had indicated, that we have good surveillance coverage. So the red-eye flights will be covered, the early morning flights will be covered, there will be no flight that wouldn't be covered by public health. In addition, we will also step up our air and ice at the seaport.